You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's.
Yeah, producer Tim, Vince Carter, Wainer.
50 years old.
So Tim's 50 and Wainer's 60.
That's right.
And Vince Carter is age?
1,000.
Unknown. Let's find that out.
Vince is 1,000.
What do you think for Carter's age?
43.
I'm going to say 44.
I mean... He just retired.
Just turned 44.
Just turned 44.
So we're both correct, essentially.
So 44 for Vince. I wonder what Vince is going to do now. It's the Jay and Dan podcast, by the way.
Hey.
Brought to you by McDonald's. Ooh, did you get any McDonald's this week? Got some Happy Meals for the kids, and they have those Rubik's Cubes puzzles. So it's not a Rubik's Cube. Yep. It's a puzzle, and it's quite challenging and fun.
The Rubik's Cube company was like, we need some new products.
Yeah, yeah, make one, like, perfect thing, and then I remember when the Rubik's Cube was massive in the early 80s, they tried a bunch of other puzzles, like other things other than the cube, mm-hmm. and they all fizzled. Yeah, they just didn't work.
I got McDonald's on the way in yesterday, Big Mac combo with a McChicken Chaser.
Oh, McChicken Chaser. Ooh, you went big time there.
I was a hungry boy.
Yeah, hungry Danny. What about you? Get a full fries with that?
I didn't get the drink, though, because I had a water in the car.
Okay. Do you find, I went skating today. What did it snow? Like an insane amount in the city of Toronto today and surrounding areas?
Like six centimeters?
I have no 12? Idea. It seemed like 1,000 again. And went out skating, outdoor rink. They're all open. There was about 3 inches of snow on the ice because they couldn't get the Zamboni. They have two sheets, and they had the Zamboni on one. But the snow was falling. And so by the time the Zamboni was done, there was still a little film of snow. But it was like skating in snow. It was weird, but it kind of was fun.
That's like that one Penguins outdoor game. Remember Crosby scored? The puck was bouncing around.
Yes, yes, exactly. It is fun skating outside, though, in this beautiful country. I love that they kept the outdoor rinks open. Looks like they're going to lock down travel a little bit here, Toolsy.
So who the hell's traveling?
So your chance to go to Hedonism 3 is going to be thwarted.
What's
again.
Going on with all those places? Those resorts.
Hedonism 3 has got to be all virtual now, eh? Hey, you want to swing with us? Perfect. Get on this Zoom party.
You know what I noticed? I don't know if anyone else have noticed this, but since wearing a mask, I always use voice text. You laugh. Same with Bobby D, our old audio guy.
He uses
voice text. I just usually do it in the car. But when I'm out and about and I do a voice text with my mask on, for some reason, the voice text understands me 98% better.
That's interesting. I wonder.
Is it clearing up my speech?
Yeah, maybe. That's so strange.
Yeah, or maybe
there's just something about the frequency or volume or something. It just picks it up better.
Yeah.
Either way, your texts are often not coherent. So anything that could improve them, I'm all for them.
Hey, I read a book today. It was a very short book.
An entire book?
You'll understand here. Have you heard of Dr. Agus? He's on Howard Stern all the time. This book's called A Short Guide to a Long Life.
Okay.
And I will give you the synopsis. Have a glass of wine with dinner.
I have at least two every night.
Ask mom or dad what killed grandpa and Aunt Marge. So it's saying find out what runs in your family.
Right, 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 right.
Smile. That was one of the tips.
That's nice.
Be positive.
Sure, if you insist.
Eat more than 3 servings of cold water fish a week.
Eat more than 3 servings of cold water fish a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. More than 3. Like 3 seems like a lot.
Eat at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables. I think we
Fair
all know
enough.
That.
I think we can handle
Never
that.
Never skip brekkie.
Never do. Never understand how people do.
And eat real food.
I was like, the A&W? Isn't that their slogan? Okay.
So, yeah. So
everything seems very, very doable and sensible.
Mm-hmm.
Eating like 4 servings of cold water fish, like that's a lot for a week? Are we having fish again?
You have to marry Captain Highlander.
That's a lot of fish. I could see like 2 servings. Come on in. Are you fixing the lights?
Yeah, you
can come on in. Yeah, come on in. So we have a lighting guy. What's your name?
Todd's here.
Todder. Todd is here because Dan is, Dan's light is, if you're listening to us, this means nothing to you, but if you're watching us, we're in the chat seats here on the Jane Dan set, and Dan's looking a little dark because there's no light on.
I feel like I'm on Back to the Future, and I'm slowly fading away.
Yeah, yeah, in that picture. Did you know my wife...
My wife...
has never seen Back to the Future.
I should...
She was 4 when it came out, but I still, like, at some point you gotta...
It's a good film.
It's such a good movie. I would put it in my top 10 all time for sure, and I might even put it in my top 5. What other movie... is like a safe for the family, exciting. The acting's fantastic. The casting is perfect. The only thing that's a bit weird is that the teenage Marty McFly is hanging around with an old scientist man. And, but that's just like us with Jim Pearl.
And he makes out with his mother, doesn't he?
Well, they kiss, but it's kind of like, I think quickly it's, you know. When's the last time you saw it?
Oh, 20 years.
Oh, okay, so it's been a long time. You should revisit with the girls. You should watch it with the girls. They would love it. It's such a good movie. I just love it. Have you ever gone online and looked? They originally cast Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly. Did you know this?
No, I didn't know that.
So
I got to look up Eric Stoltz, what he looks like.
So he's like one of those actors. You'll know him to see him. He was in Pulp Fiction and some John Hughes movies and stuff. He was in Mask. He was the guy.
Oh, yeah, he does kind of look like Michael J. Fox even.
So
they look similar.
He was cast. Not only was he cast, they filmed like several months of it.
Ooh.
And then they realized, or Robert Zemeckis, I guess, did, the director, and Steven Spielberg, who was the producer, it just wasn't working. And so they fired him.
Ooh.
They wanted Michael J. Fox in the first place, but he was doing Family Ties, and they wouldn't let him out of it. So they went back to the Family Ties producers and said, what do we have to do? And they said, he's got to film this movie at night. So he did Family Ties during the day and Back to the Future at night for whatever, 3-4 months. Said it was a nightmare.
He must have been making bank.
Yeah, I think it worked out pretty good for him. It was a good decision. Here's, I don't know if you can hear the ladder.
George Clooney made his debut on Family Ties, did he not?
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life.
Yeah, he was like a
Nick was the boyfriend on Family Ties,
that's right?
That's right,
yes. Nick. Hey, Alex, that's my little pal. Yeah, that was Mallory's boyfriend, Nick. Boy, those shows were great, weren't they?
You know,
were you allowed to watch those shows? I know Three's Company was a no-no.
We had Pop and Chips night, and that was Dukes of Hazzard. We were allowed to watch that. And then that would lead into Dallas, and we were allowed to watch the theme song for Dallas.
Right, but not the racy things going on with the Ewings and the Barnes.
We've talked about that theme song before. It's
so
majestic.
Oh, it's so good. See, Stoff's not with us right now. I wish. Jamie, who's in audio? Is it Chris?
Yeah, it's
Chris. Chris, can you call up the Dallas theme and play it?
I don't know if they have that
like
technology.
Like on YouTube? I don't know if you can do that. You can't do it? Oh, that's too bad. Hmm. You know what, Stoff, I bet you could put it in right now.
And Todd changed the light, found it was burnt out.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Todd.
So I'm going to be well lit for the television program.
For the television program. For the program.
I need all the lighting I can get.
We all do. Now, you have put a significant amount of hair product in your hair tonight. Yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen you put this much hair product in. Is that pomade or something?
Just gel. It's one of those... you probably have hair product in your house that you bought gel 20 years ago. It was one of those.
But I actually use it. So I have to use it because.
So the hair is, we're in the lockdown. We can't get our hair cut.
Yep.
So I went to town.
We can freely talk about this. Like maybe there's someone in our household, the old crusty head. Maybe there's someone in your household who could cut your hair. Like my wife could try to cut my hair, but I feel like.
My wife.
People on television, we can't do that. It's like Justin Trudeau can't do it because it just is like, well, aren't we all in this together? Like, we're all supposed to not have haircuts. Kind of like that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I completely understand. Why hasn't the Flowbee company come back? This is their time to shine.
Yeah, they missed out, I feel like.
And if you don't know, the Flowbee was essentially a vacuum with clippers connected to it. So you'd cut someone's hair and it would suck up the hair while you were doing it. But I don't think they sold that many, or maybe they ran into problems.
It was so famous, so they had to sell some of them. Stoff, let's play that commercial right now.
Before the Flowbee, only a skilled professional could produce a good layered haircut. Tens of thousands have been sold to satisfied customers. Why? Because it really works.
Proper suction is the key to getting great-looking haircuts with no cleanup.
This ingenious device lets you give yourself and family perfect haircuts every time. Tens of thousands have been sold to satisfied customers. Why? Because it really works.
There it is, the Flowbee commercial. Ha! So weird. And it looked like, literally, like it was sucking the hair out of people's heads.
There was a barbershop in Peterborough when I was younger, my hometown, and he would vacuum your head when he was finished.
After.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very smart move. And he had Playboys in the waiting area.
Hello.
So it was kind of like no one talked about it.
Right.
But he had a pretty brisk business.
Yeah, I'll bet. Just go in and flip through some magazines and then be like, okay, you're up. And be like, oh, I don't need a haircut. I was just looking at your Playboys for the articles. Yeah, I had a friend, Adam Schinkinger, in high school. And Adam's dad, Wayne, in his office in the house, had an immaculate stack of pristine Playboy magazines that we would sneak in and flip through. And, of course, so much Bush, right? Just Bush galore. Artie knows what I'm talking about, our camera guy. He was always looking at those magazines.
I had a barbershop in Redondo Beach when we lived in L.A. Free beer while you waited.
That's fun. That's nice.
Cracking Coors Lights.
I guess they'd have to get a liquor license?
I don't know.
They're just like keep it under the table kind of thing.
It was a beach town. They kind of did what they wanted.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Our guest will be able to probably tell us about many places like that out in the valley. Our guest today is Robert Lucetich.
Yes, our guest is our friend Robert Lucetich. Just the best dude. Longtime golf writer, golf reporter, worked at Fox as a golf analyst.
He's been on this podcast several times.
Many times.
The only Aussie we've ever had on.
And this is super appropriate because we mentioned that it's Gretzky's birthday, it's Tim's birthday. But Dan, it's also Australia Day. Today is Australia Day. So, or I guess probably yesterday in Australia, but you know what I'm saying.
So it's like
the 26th is Australia Day.
Canada Day, July 4th.
You got it. You got it. And my friend who's a cinematographer was telling me that all these movies are being filmed in Australia because of that 14-day hotel quarantine thing they're doing, that they've got the numbers so down. So they fly crews in, right? 14-day quarantine. You know who doesn't like that, though? Novak Djokovic. Not happy about it. Not happy with the Aussies. So it's perfect that we have one on the podcast. It's Robert Lucetich, our good friend from the beautiful the West Hills in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. Robert, how are you, sir?
I've never been better. It's Wayne Gretzky's 60th birthday, and it's Australia Day.
I know. I mean, just talking about that. Now, to me about Australia Day. What happens on Australia Day?
Well, it's people don't go to work, so there's a great, you know, it's the summer down there. So typically you have a barbecue. When they used to play the Super Bowl on this week, well, obviously this weekend, in the last weekend of January, people started following, you know, the American football, the NFL, in Australia because they would have barbecues and lunches during the game on a Monday.
Ah.
So, and on Australia Day, does Crocodile Dundee come down the chimney?
That is the most toolsy question that I've ever, like, if someone said to me, name one thing toolsy said to you over the years, that would be it. No. No, weirdly enough, I'm not even sure. I think he was in some tax trouble, but I don't think that that's what happens at all, Salty. I believe that,
hey, Robert, are you on speakerphone?
I am.
Can we go? Because we have IFBs in, so we can only hear in one ear, so it's hard to hear because of the frequency.
Okay, you want me to put it next to my ear?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's hear this.
Let's see what happens.
Hey, now we can hear those dulcet tones.
No, I'm still on speakerphone. I just put it closer to my mouth because I really just wanted to do it that way.
But we were talking about COVID in Australia. What did your countrymen do right?
I think the first thing they did right was not say it was the flu. So right off the bat, we're ahead of the game by not downplaying it, not saying that, Xi of China told us that once the weather got a little warmer, go away.
Right.
In all seriousness, what happened was, if you couldn't go to Australia without doing a 14-day quarantine,
yeah,
and honestly, that will break the back of, Australia is a big island, obviously. It's a continent, but also an island, also a country. It's the only one of its kind in the world. So in order for the virus to get in, it really needed to be brought in. Whereas, in L.A., you could just get off a plane from Florida from happy hour and go to another happy hour. Hey, listen, will you quarantine? Sure, I will, sir. Absolutely. Where's that nearest bar? There was more of a concerted approach between the state governments and the federal government. Obviously in the United States, it was what we call in Australia a dog's breakfast.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. It was a mess.
And Robert, you touched on something that's so important, I think, is that what I've learned through this whole COVID experience is that we as a culture in the Western nations, to generalize, will not listen to the rules ever. We will not. You can tell us to do something, but eventually we will stop doing that thing. And
generally, we
need the rules. We need the laws almost. And what I love about what Australia did with the 14-day quarantine was, you may not like it. It may not be exactly what you want. Obviously, I mentioned Novak Djokovic. He's all upset about the food and the hotel he's quarantining in for the Aussie Open.
Yeah. But I got two words for Novak. Uber Eats.
This is what I mean. Like, who cares?
Buddy, you've got a couple of bucks in the bank. Why don't you get some? Why don't you order in some good food? You don't have to eat the hospital food.
Yeah, I think Australia did it so right, and we have obviously not done it.
So do they have full stadiums down there now?
They have had for different sporting events over the past year. Once the restrictions were sort of eased, there were, in New Zealand, I don't know if you saw this, and you probably don't have a reason to, but the All Blacks in Australia and the Wallabies, the Australian Wallabies, played a test match in a full stadium, in front of a full stadium, because New Zealand had done such a great job of...
Jacinta.
Of ridding itself of COVID. And so the other thing is, so I have friends, Darren Cahill, who's at ESPN, former player, he's a coach now in tennis, and he's, ESPN's one of their main analysts. And he's a friend of mine. We've been friends for a long time. We grew up in the same place in Adelaide. And, he's had to do it multiple times. And it's not easy. It's not fun. You go into a hotel, and you can't leave the room.
Yeah.
It's supervised. It's not like, listen, buddy, I'll just go home. I won't go anywhere for 14 days. It's like, no, pal, you're going in that hotel room, and this is what's going to happen. In 14 days' time, we're going to let you out. And that's just a big, big difference. And you're so right, Jay, about, if you don't say to people, this has to happen, and here are the repercussions if you don't do it, what's going to happen is people are just going to say, you know what, man, look at these guys in New York, like an underground club.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, during the, and people are equating it to, you know, Prohibition. I'm like, wait a minute. In Prohibition, it was a moralistic a-hole government that said you can't drink. Here, we're trying to say, guys, we're trying to, like, save people from dying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe don't 100 of you end up in this little dungeon under a, you know, it's like crazy. It's like, who's doing this?
Well, Robert.
I don't, you know.
People might think you're joking about flying. Like, today, you could hop on a plane, literally, in Florida, land in California, and go from bar to bar. Like, you weren't even kidding. You can still do that right now.
You can't until Friday, actually, because California's releasing its easing restrictions on Friday. So since probably November, you haven't been able to. But prior to that, you could. And you could come from Scottsdale. You could come from any which way. I mean, our good friend the Whipper has mm-hmm. been in Florida, and he just is, he just can't believe it. It's like people in Florida that just don't even think it's a thing. They're just going about their lives. So it's a contrast for him, because obviously here, you know, California being a blue state is just far more stringent, but it's not, still not that stringent if you really look at it.
Well, I know, I think you're so, like, it's the same up here. I think, like, politically, Canada, California, very similar, Robert. And the holiday season, like, was just unbelievable to me, because we were not supposed to get together with anyone.
Yeah.
And everybody got together with someone. And
yeah,
I mean, happened. Everybody did.
Yeah, yeah. And then what happens is, you know, I was joking with somebody about this. It's like, okay, don't do this. But if you do it, wear a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's always at the end of it, it's like, listen, you can't do that. All right, but if you do it, wear a mask.
Right, exactly. You know what would have been good? When we were in Sochi, it almost felt like we were quarantining in a hotel, because we didn't want to leave the hotel. Because we didn't know what was out there.
I think, considering what we were exposed to in that hotel, we can survive COVID. Like,
or we might have started it.
If Toolsy can survive eating that food for a month, but
it was all the vodka.
Yeah, I mean,
though,
that was a little different, because we had bodyguards.
True.
Remember the bodyguards?
And there was potentially
the bodyguards stopped working on day two. Sorry, the bodyguards stopped working on day two. They just said, "Nah, you guys are fine."
Yeah, no, they were good. They were good. I mean, and again, I mean, the odds of the Chechenian separatists coming to find Andre O'Toole, Lucetic, and Binksy were pretty long odds. I mean,
yeah. In hindsight, I'm surprised we're alive in a lot of ways.
It is surprising. I mean, the nocturnal activities alone were enough to.
The eerie thing that I always think about is that Jeep or military vehicle that would patrol the road across from us, and we would watch it, and it was, I believe it was trying to intercept phone calls and making sure there were no threats or something, but just watching it go back and forth and knowing Putin was right across the road from us in the stadium, like the potential
right
of disaster.
Right across the road. He was in the, when we were at the U.S.-Russia game, he showed up about a minute into the game.
Yeah, that's correct.
He was there with us.
That's not happening anytime soon.
And he's still still running the show over there. They're trying to get him out, but he's a stubborn old KGB guy.
Well, as it turns out, you know, he is KGB, but he's definitely more Don Corleone. I mean, He's running the biggest mafia family, and I love that Navalny goes down there and he publishes a video of this enormous castle, looks like something out of a movie, and he's like, "This is what your money goes to, Russians. This is Putin's palace," and Putin says, "I have no idea what that is. Never seen it before in my life.
Right.
I have no idea what he's talking about. Oh wait, you can't have an aircraft go anywhere near this place. I mean, who has that kind of power?"
It's crazy because when we were there, the one thing I was always intrigued about with the Russian people is, what do they really think of him? And that was what I always would ask the Russians that were with us and working with us and the people in the hotel. And they all every single one of them thought he was full of shit and bullshit. But he, obviously, there's certainly, it's going to take, I don't know what, to get him out of there. I don't know how he gets out of there at this point. And yeah, also, it's such a massive country.
Yeah. I mean, it's because it would require, honestly, I mean, it's going to be a revolution. I'm surprised that, you know, Ovi and Malkin and Datsuk weren't, you know, arrested after they lost to the U.S. and didn't win the gold medal at those Olympics. I was thinking that someone's got to go. Maybe Kovalchuk or some. No, he likes Kovalchuk. It had to have been somebody.
Artemi Panarin might get arrested. Didn't he come out against Putin today?
He did. Well,
Russian hockey player, Robert.
I think he came out a couple of weeks ago even and said he was supported.
The guy who was poisoned?
Yeah, the guy who was poisoned. I forget his name.
Navalny, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
right.
I mean, you know, so that's another guy that's going to disappear someday.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
The rest of the players probably got invited to that castle, Robert, but their punishment was having to stay there with Putin with no vodka, just sit there with them.
Yeah. No, their punishment is they don't leave the castle.
Sorry we're going so deep on Russia, but, Robert, have you looked into, have any of those hotels that they built for the Olympics ever been stayed in since? Because they built five-star hotels in the middle of nowhere for these Olympics.
As we've discussed before, I mean, you're looking at, I mean, what was amazing about the Sochi Games was that the cost, the infrastructure costs in Sochi were equivalent to every Winter Games before combined. So, I mean, and yet, as we know, some of those door handles didn't—they came off when you tried to open the door. I mean, that was not exactly what I would call staying at the Ritz. You know,
I did drive by, Robert. I didn't even realize we had one here in Toronto. I drove by a Radisson Blue the other day, and I fondly thought because we were not in the Radisson Blue, but that was the if you could get into that hotel, that was a big deal.
Well,
that was
I mean, if you were Jorge, you could get in there, but
right. they probably didn't have the shower contraption. In
one of our esteemed colleagues. But it wasn't easy.
The showers were the same as we had in South Korea, where the shower, the toilet, the sink, it's all in one area.
Everything
so everything's
wet.
Always wet.
Yeah.
It's always wet. You're like, who cleaned a dog in here?
I never quite understood the concept of that. Just everything's in there. You turn on the shower, everything's wet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we did Toolsy did his own version of what was that guy's name? Spurlock?
Oh, Morgan Spurlock.
Every day.
That's right. He did the Morgan Spurlock, McDonald's and vodka.
That's right.
He was unbelievable.
Kept me alive.
I think you actually probably could have outlasted Spurlock. If you'd have really, if we'd have stayed another month, you would have been there.
I will say that we have never been fatter than when we came back there. We've never been fatter.
Never, ever been fatter because what were our choices?
So, Robert, anyway. Let's talk about the Tiger Doc. Everyone's talking about it. You are all over this thing. How delighted was I? I knew you told me you were in it, but I didn't expect you to be in it so prominently. It's very cool. So congratulations on that. How were you approached? How did you end up in the doc?
Well, they came at me with a very large HD camera, so I couldn't possibly get out of the picture. I mean, you guys have the cameras that are good, safe distance, but I didn't realize that camera was so close up. Yeah, but The Armin Katayan, and who wrote a book on Tiger with Jeff Benedict. Armin is a longtime, you know, CBS sports guy. I think he was with HBO for a long time. Anyway, good, you know, very well-credentialed journalist. Wrote this book on Tiger, and, you know, I helped him out. We have some mutual friends, some mutual colleagues. And I, you know, did some, helped him out. And then out of the blue, he said, look, we've sold the rights to, it's going to be on HBO. And I'd love you to, you know, to be involved. And, you know, Nick Khan wasn't taking my calls at the time. That's an inside joke, people. I wasn't with WWE, as he is now, making billions.
You would be good in it, though.
I just essentially talked to the producers, and we came up with some ideas. What I really actually liked was that none of them really knew much about golf. And I thought in the beginning, well, this could be a problem. But having seen the finished product, I actually think it worked out nicely because they really wanted to tell a human story about Tiger Woods. Who is he? And I think those of us who have followed him in his golf career, we tend to let the golf overshadow the person. You know, who is this guy and what's his story? And it's a fascinating story. It's not always a great story, and it's not always, the story that his agent and IMG and Nike wanted us to believe. But when I wrote my book, Unplayable, the entire premise was to say, not that Tiger's a bad guy and I'm gonna unveil everything that's bad about him, but just to say that he isn't this cardboard cutout that's smiling and selling a Buick. He's deeper than that. He's more interesting than that. And I think this documentary sort of, it goes down those roads, and for better or worse. But at the end of it, obviously, you know, nothing was new because this is what I did for a long time. But I think that the feedback I've gotten has been that people just did not know this story, and they actually found him more human. Now, whether you like, dislike, but more human, and I think that's a good thing.
Did they even attempt to get Tiger? Did they reach out to him? Did they approach Elon, or did they say there's no chance they would ever appear in this?
Yeah, I would say that there's very little chance of any of that happening, and you know, for good reason. I mean, it's Tiger's never going to be involved in anything that's not going to be, you know, cleansed,
yeah,
or where he won't have the ultimate green light to say yay or nay on things. I believe Elon's always been the same person. She's very private. I don't think she wants to get involved. I think she likes to be away from the limelight, and she's always been consistent with that. And, you know, she's Swedish, so a little odd. You know those Swedes?
I thought we'd hear from a Jesper Parnevik.
Jesper. Now, speaking of odd, Jesper, the eater of volcanic sand. I love the Swedes, but they're, you know, a Swedish friend of mine actually said to me when Tiger married Elon, I don't think he knows what he's in for. But they're unique people.
They're good hockey players.
And there's some very good hockey players. Ironically, most of the Swedish tennis guys are really always best mates with the Aussies. They get along very well. So, and generally speaking, I mean, like Henrik Stenson, great guy. Like Swedes are great, but they are a little, you know, just a little odd.
Well, isn't Jesper Parnevik's family, his wife, his kids, everyone, aren't they the Kardashians of Sweden? Don't they have a reality show or something? Or did
they
I read
do,
that?
They do, yeah.
Right.
And if I could speak Swedish, I'd tell you what it was all about. But I don't. But they do, and they're very, and they're, you know, I have seen that this show is quite popular, and his daughters are beautiful, and, you know, I mean, it's all, I'm sure it's actually entertaining.
It's all very Swedish.
I know Jesper a little bit, and he's a funny guy. He's an interesting cat. So I'm sure it's a very, very entertaining show. But
I used to love
then going back to Tiger. Tiger is never going. You know, he was never going to be involved. And you can see that the people. You know, I mean, I had somebody say to me, "Well, the only people who are in there are the ones that have burned bridges with Tiger." I mean, and that's probably fair enough. Steve Williams is caddy. I mean, the people who are no longer in Tiger's life or have been cut out, you know, his high school girlfriend. And
yeah.
But I think that the one thing about Tiger that really always threw me a bit was that he has an incredible ability to just cut someone out of his life. And I mean somebody that was there prominently, and just one day, without any warning, they're out.
Well,
and
you mentioned it with a high school girlfriend. Like, that was abrupt.
Yeah, dropped off a letter to her house.
I mean, the letter. I mean, well, let's talk about the fact she still has the letter. You might want to let that one go, girl.
Right.
it's been a few years.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, yeah. But I think, again, that tells the story. It's one of the thing about Tiger that I've always, you know, found fascinating is the way, the discipline in which he keeps his life in compartments. He just compartmentalizes everything. Everyone's in a box, and there's no crossover. You're in this box, you're in this box. You're in the Las Vegas hostess box, that's your box. You don't start showing up at golf tournaments, and you're not going to dinner, and you're not, you know, you're not coming to a Nike event. I mean, everyone just goes, and when people try to cross over, I think Tiger basically freaks out and says, you're out. All right? But you didn't know the rules. There's the boundary. Off you go. And so, you know, he's very, very disciplined about that. But there was one kid that I was wondering if they were going to get a hold of this kid. And I told them how to, or at least the last time I knew. But he was a young guy that was a young college golfer playing in Orlando. And Tiger, for whatever reason, the kid was a really hard worker, never tried to buddy up to Tiger, just was on the range at Isleworth, pounding balls. Tiger saw him there day after day. And finally, one day, Tiger says something, and they become friends. But more than that, they share this bond of work ethic and becoming better golfers, and they're out there all the time. And then Tiger moves to Jupiter, not even a see you later, kid.
Wow.
He just moved to Jupiter. End of story. Gone.
Steve Williams, if my memory serves me correctly, they didn't ask him about any of the affairs. Did he have some things that were off limits that he was going to talk about?
No, I don't think so. Steve, the thing about Steve is that, if you know, I think that he probably suspected Tiger was leading, you know, doing some naughty things at nights, but he also, I think, didn't want to know.
Yeah, he just had the horse blinders on.
Yeah, he had just gotten married. He had a little kid. He got married later in life. He was, I'm guessing, but somewhere around 40, and he was happy, and he didn't want to go down roads that would make that, you know, his marriage something that would be problematic for his marriage. And being a father, and he took all that stuff seriously. In fact, the real reason that he and Tiger fell out was that Steve Williams is he's just a guy that sees life in a very black and white way. And he said to Tiger, you need to tell everyone that I had nothing to do with this. And of course, Tiger couldn't do that. A, Tiger wasn't talking to anybody. He was, you know, hiding under a rock. But B, if he says Steve Williams had nothing to do with this, what does that say about everyone else? Right? Now you've got to start going through the list. Who else had something to do with it or didn't? And if you leave somebody out, then is that the assumption that, you know, so I tried to explain that to Steve, but that's not how he saw it. In fact, what he called me one time from New Zealand, and he was irate because his mother, his dear old mother, had gone, you know, to the petrol station, as we call it in that part of the world, to the gas station, and she bought her Sunday paper, and on the front of the Sunday paper there is a scantily clad Las Vegas, you know, girl, colorful identity. And she says, my night with Steve Williams and Tiger Woods. Mm. And that's the story. And, you know, and so he's screaming down the phone at me. He says, this is just absolute bullshit. And he says, you know why I know it's bullshit? Because I never went there. And he deliberately didn't, because he knew potentially what might be at the other end. So he avoided. He didn't go to Tiger's bachelor party for the same reason. So, you know, Tiger, on the other hand, was just not looking at. Not they weren't sharing the view of how that how that should transpire. And I think Steve just got to the point where he said, you know, I'm, and then obviously he caddied for Adam Scott, and that was made Tiger really unhappy. But you know, it was in a lot of ways. I know Tiger obviously won the 2019 Masters, and it was a great comeback and all the rest of it with Joey LaCava, who's a great guy. I like the guy a lot on his bag, but there was something about Tiger Woods and Steve Williams that made them just so intimidating and so impossible to beat on a Sunday at a major. I mean, they just were, the two of them just, you know, Steve was his Rottweiler.
Yeah, Steve looked like a rugby player. He looked like a rugby player carrying a golf bag.
He was a rugby player, and he loves rugby. And he's not a guy that has, you know, he's not going to mind his P's and Q's. So he was, you know, and he understood what Tiger needed. Tiger didn't need to say anything like, deal with these people. He did it. He went there and said, quiet. And you know, and there were other little things that were, you know, that I think were sort of mind game things. Like if a guy was a right-handed player and they'd get to a par three, Steve Williams would go to the tee marker on the right next to it, and he'd slap the bag down so it would say Tiger Woods, and he'd stand there and fold his arms. So the guy's a right-handed player. He's going to be looking at him when he hits the shot. And, you know, just in case you've forgotten, mate, who you're playing today, let me remind you. And he would just, and this was all very calculated. So, you know, golf is a gentleman's game, but only until when it's not.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent way of putting it. I loved your line in the doc. Tiger conquered the world, but the problem with that is the world will want its revenge.
Yes.
Yes, Lucenich. Great line.
Yes. You know what's great about that? I didn't get paid any extra for it, and it's everywhere. That's what's not so great about that. I see that someone sent me the trailer, and I'm like, okay, all right, really, guys? That's my line. You know, and someone like in USA Today or something said, yeah, I saw the trailer, and this was all good stuff. But that's not even the best line. The best line came from Robert Lucenich. So, yeah, it's true, though. You know, he conquered the world, and the problem with that is the world's coming to get its revenge. And it did for a lot of years.
Steve Williams, how much did he make, and does he have, like, a massive compound in Australia?
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Yeah, he lives on a farm. I'm going to say lots of sheep. and he, you know what he's really into? He has they call them saloon cars down there. They're a car racing team, the ones that go around tracks.
I think I knew that, yeah. NASCAR. That's why he always has Castrol on his shirts.
Yeah, he got, I don't know what he got from.
Or Valvoline, I think it was.
Pennzoil or Valvoline, whatever it was. He got a good amount of money for, because he would take that bib off on the 18th hole every single time.
Oh, yeah, everyone would see that.
And let's get some, let's earn some cash. But, how much did he make from Tiger? I would say at least $1 million every year. So, you know, I know that, I mean, this is something, I like the guy. So, I mean, I'm sure people will say you're biased, but I do like him because I think he's a straight-up guy. He's a very honest, straight shooter. But he gave money to a children's hospital in New Zealand, and he didn't tell anybody. And it was a substantial amount of money. And, you know, I think he's a good guy. I really do.
That's good.
So he made that money. I'll tell you another thing. He never went on, as far as I know, he never went on the payroll. He just said, you win, I'll take my share. If you don't win, I get nothing.
Wow.
What's the standard rate for a caddy? A percentage of how much of the win?
Usually it's just your cost. So, you know, a couple grand a week for just showing up. And then you get, if you don't make the cut, that's all you get. And then if you make the cut, there's percentages that increase. Usually when you win, though, it's 10%. So let me tell you, the year Tiger won nine times,
Oh, man.
That might have been a good year for Steve Williams.
Okay, but if you're caddying for Matt Kuchar, you might not get anything. You might get nothing, Robert.
No hablo inglés. No hablo inglés.
Robert, okay. Robert mentioned it, his book, Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season, is available on Amazon.ca right now. I just want to read a couple of reviews, quick reviews, an in-depth look. Okay, Lucetich takes on the difficult task of penetrating the insulation of Woods' world as few others have. That's from the New York Daily News. ESPN.com. Lucetich did a good job. Alan Shipnuck from Sports Illustrated, a very interesting account with some strong reporting and interesting takes. Bottom line is, Lucetich, you killed it. The critics have all agreed. But after you wrote that book, was that the end of your relationship with Tiger?
Strangely enough, not. The where things began to sour was when he and Steve Williams broke up, which was later in 2010. And I think he just figured that I was, you know, mates with Stevie, and therefore I was the enemy.
Right.
Because he was, you know, unkind to me several times, and we'll leave it at that. But after that, interestingly, over the years, he was fine. We were certainly not going out to dinner, and I didn't get a Christmas card from him on Christmas. But he, you know, he's always been pretty decent about answering my questions. And anyone that reads Unplayable, I have yet to get anyone that read it and said, oh, you really assassinated this guy. You really took him down. You tore him to shreds. Because there's a lot in there that's good. You know, and there's stuff in there, obviously, that is a little salacious. But his life, I mean, if I had to describe Tiger Woods, now, I think, by the way, I should say this. He is a different person these days. Far more mature, far more rounded. You know, good dad from what I hear. And you know, he's no longer the pampered, surrounded by yes men, sort of arrested development, teenage kind of kid. And I didn't even mind that because he's actually piercingly funny, very potty mouth, but really like a pretty funny guy. But he was always on guard. He would only be that guy, what I would say would be his natural self, if he fully trusted that nothing would be leaked out. And I would say to him a couple of times, you know, it doesn't, if it leaks, it's not a big deal. It's just a funny joke, you know, like you told a joke. All right, you know, it's maybe a little baldy, but, you know, you told a joke and it's fine. But of course, he just had this view that Tiger Woods was this creation, a little bit, obviously, of Earl Woods, obviously of himself, but also of his many sponsors, of IMG, of Nike, Gatorade. I mean, so he just was like always sitting there as this, as a sponsor. And I just thought, well, you know, it's like people might find you more interesting. Now they do, but again, he lost a lot of sponsorships in 2010, so perhaps he might have been right about that part.
Robert, we really appreciate you coming on. I think you'll be happy to hear what movie I watched this past weekend, Farlap.
Farlap, what a great movie. What a big heart that horse had.
What,
you know,
a
that
super
was the reason
horse.
He was so good. He was the greatest racehorse. His heart was actually bigger than like any other horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great story. And
a lot
watch,
like you, Stolze.
Is that movie bigger in Australia or Man from Snowy River? Which one is the Australian classic?
Oh, good. You know what? It's neck and neck.
Wow.
Just like a good Melbourne Cup coming down the stretch at the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah. And the same lead actor, Wilkinson, Tom Wilkinson, in both those?
Yeah, you know, look, Australia will always find some handsome guy to be in a movie.
That's right.
And usually they've been on Neighbours first, right? Hasn't every Australian actor been on Neighbours at some point? It feels like a rite of passage.
Yeah. I'm going to start the rumor that Russell Crowe was.
Right.
Even though, by the way, he's from New Zealand originally. We don't, you know, that's a that's a story that doesn't get told much, but he is actually a Kiwi, but he's lived in Australia a long time. We kind of adopted him.
Oh, wait, but let's go back to that. I had no idea about that. Wait, so you're saying Russell Crowe, what, was born in New Zealand?
Oh, he was born and raised there. He was there until, probably until he was, I'm going to throw out, 20 years old when he started embarking on an acting career.
Fascinating.
And okay, if you have 2 minutes, I'll give you the, 90 seconds, I'll give you the story of how I really knew about his loyalties. Is I interviewed Jodie Foster and for a magazine piece years ago, and she happens to mention her and her partner had had a baby, and she said, "Oh, you know, I just got a baby gift from Russell Crowe, and it's a rugby jumper." And I said, "Oh, out of interest, what color is it?" She said, "Black." And I said, the Aussies are gold and green.
Yes.
So the All Blacks are black. And she goes, "Oh, it was a black one." I go, "Okay."
Okay.
So old Rusty showing his true colors there.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. He thought he could get away with it, but little did he know that investigative journalist Robert Lucetich might be interviewing Jodie Foster.
And Robert, before we let you go, since we're sponsored by McDonald's, two-part question.
Oh, yeah.
What is your go-to McDonald's order, and is there anything different at McDonald's in Australia that you can't get in North America?
Oh, do they put an egg on the Big Mac?
Funny that you should say. Yes, they do. They do an Aussie burger in Australia. And I'm going to say that that is, in fact, my favorite McDonald's burger because it comes with what we call beetroot, and that's beets. So you put a slice of, like a big slice, like a pineapple kind of slice of beets on the burger, and it's delicious. Also, you might throw a pineapple on there. I don't know if they do that in McDonald's, but you do it in Australia. When you get a hamburger with the lot, it's with beets, an egg.
That's crazy.
Pineapple,
yeah.
And bacon.
Yes. That's what I always remember, the egg. It was like a sunny side up egg, so it's all runny.
Oh, yeah.
McDonald's, you don't need to bring that here. I don't need pineapple on my burgers.
A pineapple on the burger, you got to try that. Yeah. Cook the pineapple first, though.
Robert, Toolsy and fruit. It's a little bit like Stevie and Tiger. We're not going to get them together.
A good meat and potatoes kind of fella.
That's right.
Peterborough. Toolsy? What does the McDonald's in Peterborough serve?
Oh, they're all over the place, and I know the family that owns all of them.
Oh boy, I would say that it's meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes would be a great McDonald's item.
There it is. Toolsy's there every day.
Exactly. Robert, you're a great man. Thanks for coming on, buddy, and stay safe.
Had a great time.
When this is all over, you're coming up to Canada, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, you betcha. I'm going to come up there with the whipper.
Yes.
Oh, man. That could be trouble.
I'll take that week off.
And Webby and whip. That's going to be big trouble.
Look out.
Webby told me a story real quick. He's like, I found out Oliver, this is one of his sons, he called me yesterday. I found out he's a Web. I'm like, how? He's like, I looked out in the front and he was playing road hockey with a bunch of the neighbor kids. He was standing, punching two of them and smiling.
Webby, my great Webby story is that I said, I think Webby's had a few too many. And you looked at me and you said, is he drinking any brown? I said, no, beer. He goes, oh, he's fine. Fine. You can go for days on the beer.
Oh, yeah.
Fine.
He chews the bottles. Okay, Robert. Be safe.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, boys. Take care, boys. See ya.
Tacked up.
What a good guy.
Robert Lucetich. You can find him on Twitter.
Yep. And we're going to hook him up with Hound Dog. Hound Dog has his own podcast, and we've been on it.
We sure have.
And we're going to hook Robert up with the Hound Dog, get him on the Hound Dog
at
pod.
Robert Lucetich. So at Robert and last name spelled Lucetich. At Robert Lucetich, a good follow on Twitter. He talks about everything. He's a journalist.
Very intelligent guy. And if you did want to pick up Unplayable, his book about Tiger's most tumultuous season, as I mentioned, it is indeed on Amazon.ca. In fact, you can get it in hardcover for $20 Canadian. That's a good deal. I might order that up right now.
I bet you
have that.
A lot of readings being done during this pandemic. I've read more than I ever have in my life. I've read 10 books in the last year.
Wow, that's great.
A lot of them were longer than the one I read this afternoon.
Yeah, the leaflets count. But that's some good advice that the doc gave us.
It was all pretty basic. Oh, and the other
fish
one.
Fish is excessive.
The other one he said was don't take multivitamins. Fish. Well, he said multivitamins, no bueno.
Well, you know, they all say people who live in the Mediterranean, southern Spain, southern Italy, live long lives, even though they're drinking and smoking till they're 85. But they say it's the diet. It's all the olive oil, all the fish.
That fish!
Right? So maybe that doc has something to that. Just crush a lot of fish.
Get a fillet.
Yeah,
eat fillet of fish.
4 fillet of fishes a week, and you'll live till you're 95. That's the lesson I want you guys to take away from this particular podcast. We got to run to do the television program. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
They're going home.
Listening to the Jay and Dan podcast,
brought to you by our friends at McDonald's.
James Duffy presents the Rubber Boots Podcast.
So we're sitting down at our table. The waiter comes up and he's like profusely sweating. And this is like 100% his first line to us. He goes, "Hello, I am not well. I'm very ill."
You ate there?
I came down with it yesterday. I've just not been good. Not good at all.
Get it at tsn.ca and anywhere you get your podcasts.